The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny taking you up to 6:30 on the Fan. We're at Hard Times Cafe in Springfield for a Field Trip Friday.
As Washington continues to build the foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morad can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com, and be sure to tell them that Grant Nanny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Commanders may not be playing this weekend, but that doesn't mean that our eyes don't have to be glued to football to see how the upcoming games affect them. The playoff push really begins in earnest. Used to be the old Bill Belichick saying that the season started after Thanksgiving. And it's very rare, but it is happening finally around these parts. Washington is going to be a part of this second season now. Let's go to the guest hotline. Welcome onto the show, Eric Edholm, Power Rankings, NFL Draft, NFL Media, joining us on Grant and Danny. Eric, what do you make of the Commanders at 8-5? They have apparently about a 52% chance of being the 7th seed, a 25% chance of being the 6th seed and actually catching the Packers, or they're a game back of, over an 80% chance of being in the playoffs. How do you see their stretch run going?
Yeah, they're in pretty good shape, I'd say, overall. You know, the late bye week helps, too. And, I know it feels like even with the big win over Tennessee, you know, they did kind of crawl into the bye a little bit with the three losses ahead of that. But, you know, overall, all things considered, I think they're okay. I think they're 2-2 in the division, if off the top of my head. So, you know, that wild card more likely, as you said. Real possibility that they have to play the top, you know, with the basically whoever doesn't win the NFC, they're the Eagles, the Lions. And, you know, we saw last night how tough the Lions are. We've seen this year how tough the Eagles are. So if that's the way it goes, I think the best thing that's going for them is that, you know, they're kind of shooting above expectations overall, I think we'd all say. And it's been a banner first season for the franchise, you know, just a cleansing season, I think, is the way I would describe it. And you can go into a matchup like that with nothing to lose. You know, I watched the Rams and Bucks give the Lions a real tough time in Detroit last year in the playoffs. I mean, anything can happen. So I think short of them falling out of the playoff mix, I think this has already been a pretty successful season.
So, Eric, looking at Detroit last night, you touched on it. They're the best team in the NFL. They should be number one atop everyone's power rankings. So with that caveat, it feels like they're not quite as dominant as they were maybe a few weeks ago. And maybe that's just recency bias. I'm looking at that that Thanksgiving game against Chicago. Green Bay's obviously really good. But is there any sign of maybe, I don't say slowing down, because, again, they're still number one. You can only be number one by so much. But is there any sign of vulnerability that you're seeing here of late?
Yeah, it's the attrition on defense I would point to as the biggest concern. You saw last night they signed Quan Alexander and Jamal Adams, and you know, that last week called them up. had them playing on the first series on defense. That just kind of gives you a snapshot of the injuries they've been, you know, accruing on that side of the ball. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, Alex Anzalone, you know, Lee McNeil left the game last night. Ton of defensive linemen. They have, I think, four linebackers on IR. Secondary's banged up. So, you know, that's the biggest thing, is that you can see them drop to the level of performance that they had last year on defense. They were ranked in the bottom 10 in yards allowed. You know, situationally, they were pretty good. They would force turnovers and, you know, sacks and things like that, but you know, you could move the ball on them. And I think, you know, this year up until 3-4 weeks ago, they've been playing obviously exceptional defense and had been way above their skis. But with all the injuries, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, we've seen Jared Goff and throw 5 interceptions and win a game. That's how explosive they are. They really only need one good half of offensive football to win a game. So I would say that it would probably take a continued deterioration of that depth chart on the defensive side.
How do you see the Bears' head coaching vacancy search going this offseason? Yeah. And what kind of a factor do you anticipate Cliff Kingsbury here in D.C. being in the mix?
Yeah, good question. Obvious place to start. I mean, given that he has experience with Caleb Williams, he did interview for the offensive coordinator position that was given to Shane Waldron. Didn't get it, obviously. You guys were the beneficiaries, and I don't know if something, you know, wasn't considered the right fit. Maybe it was an Eberflus thing. It's hard to know. You know, I know that Kevin Warren, the team president, who, you know, helped kind of rebuild the Vikings and do their stadium, he's come to the Bears now and taking a big role. Obviously, Ryan Poles, the GM, too. I think the obvious answer is, yeah, they're going to go with somebody like a Cliff Kingsbury, like a Ben Johnson, offensive guru, pair him with Caleb, fix the offense, get it right, and make the most of your number one QB. That said, I have also talked to people who understand kind of the Bears thinking a little bit, and it wouldn't be shocking if they go for really what they've lacked for a long time, which is they've always kind of gone for the hot coordinators and that sort of thing, the up-and-coming coaches and whatnot. They have gone for established guys like John Fox in the past, but they really wouldn't be opposed to a CEO type, you know, somebody who can command respect in the locker room like a Mike Vrabel. I wouldn't say that Kingsbury is, you know, by any means the head and shoulders above the rest of the crowd or anything, especially given that he's already talked to them once. Now, maybe they regret not hiring him. Obviously, I'm guessing they do since they fired Walton before they got rid of Eberflus. But I think they're going to cast kind of a wide net, at least as far as the type of candidate, and kind of see how the interviews go. And they have a pretty good head start over a lot of the teams who will be making changes this offseason.
Eric at home with us here on G&D NFL Media. I asked this earlier in the show, but I'm curious as to your take. Is there anybody that's outside the playoff picture right now that's going to end up in the playoff picture when the playoffs start?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think the one that's probably most likely, I would say, is probably Arizona if they win this weekend. You know, they're 6-6, Seattle 7-5, but they kind of have to win. I mean, they win that game and avoid the sweep to Seattle. Seattle would be 2 games ahead of them with that. They'd be in pretty tough shape. So there's a lot of pressure on them, but I would kind of give them a decent shot. I think the Bucs, obviously, given that they're still technically behind the Falcons, because the Falcons did win the season series between them. But you've seen, obviously, how things have gone with Kirk Cousins lately, and it hasn't looked right. I even wonder if they weren't playing his old team, Minnesota, this weekend, would he be starting or would it be Michael Penix? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's reasonable to ask given the way he's played the last 3-4 games. So, yeah, there's some real concern, I think, in Atlanta with the quarterback position. So I would say Tampa and Arizona probably have the best shots, but there are a few more that are kind of still in the mix.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, Eric at home of NFL Media, joining us on Cousins, who obviously used to play here. The 4-pick game was the most he's had in 10 years. I mean, it was brutal, no doubt about that. But, I mean, is it just him? You know, I'm a guy who's long really liked the way that he's played. This is one of the worst stretches of his career. But Watching them closely, I think it's really been two bad games. Everyone says it's three. I'm not sure I agree with that. Having said that, the numbers are the numbers, right? I mean, it's no touchdown passes in three games. I guess my question is, though, is it just that Cousins is broken, or are there more issues on that offense?
I wonder if there isn't a physical issue. I mean, they haven't listed him on the injury report, but you know how those Achilles injuries go and things like that. I mean, the more serious injuries, you know, you can go through your rehab, come into camp, be in great shape, get ready to go, and then at some point you either aggravate it or, you know, re-aggravate it a second or third time, and, you know, it can just kind of cause that enough discomfort. I feel like when I watch him throw the football, it's a frisbee. It's kind of floating, gliding through the air, as opposed to cutting through the air. And, you know, if he's going into the wind, or if they're outdoors and there's some weather, it looks worse. I mean, that was the Denver game, I thought, was pretty ugly, you know. And after that first drive, nothing went right. And then obviously last week, too. And just not able to step into his throws and generate some velocity there. So it's all about touch and timing and placement. If that gets thrown off, you know, that's what leads to trouble. So I think corners are kind of squatting on him. They're sitting there saying, you want to beat me deep? God bless you. Like, go ahead and do it. We'll, if you can do it, then we'll respect it. But right now, we're going to sit on everything short and try to jump these routes.
Eric, are the Steelers a Super Bowl contender?
That's a great question. I know you guys saw him a few weeks ago, and if Russ Wilson plays at the level he did against Cincinnati, which, you know, let's face it, that's a defense that's looked bad way more than it hasn't this year. So there is a caveat, but if they can play like that on offense, why not? I mean, Chiefs are kind of barely scraping by. We know the Bills obviously have had, you know, some playoff heartbreaks, missed field goals, you know, Patrick Mahomes beating them and whatnot. I mean, you can go down the list. They've had some close games that they've slipped through their fingers. Who's to say that can't happen again? You know, I don't know that the AFC is as loaded as you've kind of become accustomed to it being. So, you know, you have to ask yourself, does that next tier of contenders really scare you? I mean, obviously the Ravens are a scary team, you know, even as a wild card. I think them getting the division title would go a long way towards helping their chances, but I suspect they're going to be a little bit shy of that Super Bowl, you know, sort of level.
Eric at home here on Grant and Danny. My favorite question of the day, this is something I'm talking about with buddies on, like, our little football text.
Yeah.
If the Lions played the Eagles next week,
yeah,
neutral site, who wins that game? It feels to me like Detroit's the better team, Eric, but that Philly matches up really well with them. And I'm even going to say if Detroit's healthy. Like, how do you feel about that game?
Yeah, I mean, if Detroit was fully healthy and if the Eagles were fully healthy, maybe I would give a slight edge to Detroit. But, yeah, I think we've seen enough this year to know that even with a technically a worse record than they were at this point last year, this is a vastly better team, much more like the 2022 Eagles that – look, I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl. I didn't think the Niners could. I mean, I didn't think the Chiefs could handle them. And, you know, for a while it looked that way. And so they came close. I know there was a big hangover last year, even with the 10-1 start. Things just didn't look right. But this year, really since the bye, they've looked so much better in all three phases. But especially, I mean, Jalen Carter up front, that secondary, Zach Bond, you know, Vic Fangio has done a great job there, bringing all those pieces together, squeezing the most out of that talent. They have a lot. And then offensively, A.J. Brown getting healthy and back in the lineup, Saquon having his amazing season. They're tough to stop. I mean, especially with the Lions' secondary being what it is. I mean, they really kind of need some pressure to help out a little bit. They're better, but they still need some help back there. I could see the Eagles, you know, if they played 10 times, I could see it being 5-5, but I also could see the Eagles, you know, winning six of them, too.
Eric, I'll be succinct here. This wouldn't hold up in a court of law, but I just don't trust Minnesota. I know they're good. I've got the resume speaks for itself. The record is there. It's not like 2 years ago when they had a negative point differential and won 13 games. I'm not saying it's that, but I feel like that's probably coloring the witness here. I don't know if I'm using the phrase right, but that's probably influencing my thinking. I just don't trust them, even though they keep winning football games. What do you think?
I, I hear you, man. I'm the same way. I mean, right, the record speaks for itself, but also did it truly speak for itself, as you alluded to, when they went 13-3 and were outscored by their opponents, which is very, very, very hard to do. I don't think it's ever been done in the NFL before. So we're not there. This is a better, more well-rounded, balanced team, I think. Now, Cousins is really good for that team. Jefferson was amazing, but they haven't had Justin Jefferson go nuclear this year. He had the game against Chicago 2 weeks ago where, you know, his second catch of the game came in overtime. I mean, there have been some games where, and, you know, I missed a little time too, but, you know, Aaron Jones has been banged up. They've cycled through three left tackles. You know, I mean, it's been a whirlwind for them, but they've come out on top a lot of games. And to me, I think they have an excellent coaching staff. I think they've really... Brian Flores deserves a head coaching interview at some point this offseason. You know, we'll see if an owner will hire him after the Miami thing. But he and Kevin O'Connell, I think, are as good a 1-2 punch in a coaching staff as we see out there right now. I mean, I think Kevin O'Connell is a top five coach in this league, and maybe I'm alone on that one. I don't know. But I really think that he's been a huge reason why they've, you know, why they're not like an 8-win team right now instead of a 10-win team. So, you know, when it comes down to the heavyweights, can they beat a Detroit in a 1-game situation or beat Philly? Can they? I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know that they're truly special in any one regard, but they do play good, smart, tough, heady football.
Not alone on this show. I love Kevin O'Connell. I'm with you.
Yep.
All right. Let's end the conversation here. We'll come full circle back to the Commanders. And this is what we're going to take calls on with our listening audience next. They have four games out of the bye. So they don't play this weekend, and then they finish with Saints, Eagles, Falcons, Cowboys. I want to know how many wins you think are still on their schedule and what do they end with? Saints, I think, Eagles, yeah. Falcons, Cowboys. They're sitting at 8 now.
Yeah, I think you know, the Saints game being in New Orleans, you kind of say it's a little bit of a toss-up or slight edge to Washington. I think they probably win that game. Enough time to prepare. I think they'll be fine. Plus, you kind of saw the Saints lose last week, too. So, you know, maybe the Rizzi boost has kind of faded a little bit. I would give Washington the edge there. I would say the Eagles obviously have the edge in that matchup, just based on what we've seen, the totality of it. So I think they lose that one, but... You know, playing the Falcons and Cowboys last 2 weeks of the season sounds pretty appealing to me. I mean, especially the way Dallas' defense has played better. They've rallied on that side, but they're still playing with a backup quarterback. Atlanta, we went through their issues. So I would say 3-1 is very reasonable, 2-2 possible, but I don't think it's going to be worse than that. I think Dan's a good coach. I think he'll understand that, you know, what it takes to kind of get these guys across the finish line. I'd be surprised if they flounder down the stretch.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us, man. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, fellas. Take it easy.
Yeah, enjoy it. There's Eric Edholm of NFL Media with us on Grant and Danny. That is the question we'll hit next. How many wins do you see for the Commanders in their final four games? We can open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines on that at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We're live at Hard Times in Springfield. If you're in the area, Springfield, driving on the highway, Hard Times Cafe, we're going to be here till 6:30, another hour plus. So come kick it with us. Great opportunity to grab a good spot in front of the screens for the games tonight as well. You are listening to The Fan.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, the Saints game being in New Orleans, you kind of say it's a little bit of a toss-up or slight edge to Washington. I think they probably win that game. Enough time to prepare. I think they'll be fine. Plus, you kind of saw the Saints lose last week, too. So, you know, maybe the Rizzi boost has kind of faded a little bit. I would give Washington the edge there. I would say the Eagles obviously have the edge in that matchup, just based on what we've seen, the totality of it. So I think they lose that one, but playing the Falcons and Cowboys last 2 weeks of the season sounds pretty appealing to me. I mean, especially the way they've Dallas' defense has played better. They've rallied on that side, but they're still playing with a backup quarterback. Atlanta, we went through their issues. So I would say 3-1 is very reasonable, 2-2 possible, but I don't think it's going to be worse than that. I think Dan's a good coach. I think he'll understand that, you know, what it takes to kind of get these guys across the finish line. I'd be surprised if they flounder down the stretch.
That was Eric Edholm just a few minutes ago right here on Grant and Danny. We are live in Springfield at Hard Times Cafe today. Come on through. We're hanging out for just a little bit longer, up till 6:30, live and local on The Fan with you on a bye week Friday. It's a field trip Friday, talking ball. Let's get into that very topic with you guys. We asked Eric how many wins left for the Commanders on their schedule. They have four games remaining after the bye. At New Orleans, the Saints are not good, to be clear, but they are much better since firing their head coach and going to an interim head coach. It's evaluation time. Everyone's trying to play for jobs next year. They're 2-1 since that change. Then you're playing the Eagles at home. The Eagles have beaten you in Philly. They're arguably the best team in the NFC. Only Detroit is higher in the standings and more favored, I would say, around the country in the conference. They've got the Falcons, losers of three straight. Pretty good team at 6-3 that was headed to a division title, but looks like right now they'll be on the outside looking in at the start of the playoffs, and you might be getting Michael Penix in that game, depending on how the next couple of weeks go for Atlanta. And then you end the season with the Dallas Cowboys, who will be out of the playoffs at that point almost certainly, and in Dallas, presumably, you know, packing for wherever they're headed after the game, family in town, could be a January 5th tilt where they've got nothing on the line. So working my way through this, Danny, I'll give you my wins and losses in a second, but I want you to play the game first. How many wins left for Washington on the schedule?
This feels like two to me, and I know people are going to might bristle at that, and here's where I'm coming from on it. We'll go through the specifics. They'll be favored probably in three of the four games, to your point that you just laid out very well. But this feels to me like a team, I don't quite trust them to be 3-1 yet. And that's all that is, right? This is one of those, like, do you really think this team, I'm not talking about them specifically, is this really a 14-3 team? Or is this really a 10-6 team? You know, as you're watching them go through their seasons where they're not due for a slip-up or something like that, this doesn't feel to me like they're going to end up with 11 wins.
All right, so it's obvious that the Eagles is the least likely game that they win, right? Mm-hmm. So you're just chalking that up as an L then. Fair?
Yeah, if we're doing that exercise, yeah.
Okay, so they lose to the Eagles. So if they were to get to 3-1, all they've got to do, and it's easier said than done, but basically is win the two games they should win.
Mm-hmm.
At New Orleans, they will be favored. At Dallas, they will be favored. And then the pick'em game, essentially, is a game that I now think they'll be favored in as well when the Falcons come to town against Atlanta. That's the 3 is on the table. You just heard Edholm talk about it, and I've thought all along 2-2 myself. But the Falcons matchup has changed massively over the last couple of weeks. This is why I think the exercise of going game by game and playing the W and L thing preseason is so silly, because we don't know anything.
Yep.
Like, we don't even know the Falcons game a month ago compared to right now. But the Saints, if we're saying should be a win, and the Cowboys should be a win, and the Eagles should be a loss, 2-1. If the Falcons game was a real difficult game to win and you were going to say that was an L, 2-2, how can you say that right now? After three straight losses, after the Broncos clubbed them, after the Chargers played a really bad game and beat them in Atlanta this past week. That's a game at home, oh, by the way. And if it's Penix, maybe in his first or second career start, that means that they're essentially packing up shop for next year, and you're playing a rookie who might be prone to the mistake. To me, it's starting to trend toward 3-1. I've been saying 2-2 all along, 10-7, but correct me where I'm wrong here.
You're not. And the lesson to me learned from that Cowboys game, and the lesson learned maybe by extension from those Giants games where they won and they deserve credit for winning those games, I'm still not quite ready just to say because on paper it's correct, that means that's how the result's going to play out. Right. I mean, that Dallas game, I think, did a lot of damage to people's sort of arrogance, confidence, whatever you want to call it, when it came to saying they're going to beat the bad team. Dallas is bad. Washington looked worse and was worse the entire game. That, I think, undid a lot of the good deposits in the bank. Had it just been the one-off and they'd split with Pittsburgh and Philly and won one of those two games, I don't think it would be viewed the same way. But it was viewed as, oh, this is the get-right game, but we didn't know it was going to be for Dallas. So I think because of that, I'm just not confident that they're going to kind of, you know, after the Tennessee, this is now just a blip of three games, back to Tennessee, this is what they do now, and they're just going to rip off and beat bad teams. I feel like a slip-up is coming. On paper, everything you're saying is correct.
Yeah.
It's indisputable.
Well, for the record, we agree on 2-2, right? I'm just kind of throwing out there.
Yeah, no.
There's a chance they're favored in three, which means hold serve and go 3-1, which means you should theoretically go 3-1. Like, they have one really good team left on their schedule. Now, the flip side could happen, too. Like, think about it this way. If the Falcons come out this weekend, I'm not anticipating this, but they beat the Vikings and Cousins goes off, then this whole three-week narrative ends. It's on its head. They're 7-6. They're probably headed to the playoffs. They then play the Raiders and the Giants before Washington.
Exactly.
They could win three straight, come in on a heater. They'd be 9-6 and the easy, maybe even already crowned, NFC South champion at that point. And that's a different game, and then you go, well, you'll probably beat Washington. I think it's more likely that they are 8-7 at that point.
Yeah, they keep on middling, because that's what they've been.
Lose to the Vikings, and then maybe sneak past the Raiders and the Giants. Although, what's really interesting about them, why they're so fascinating, if they lose to the Vikings, do they just pack it in and go, okay, let's play Penix for a month? Or do they stick with Cousins and try to actually win the division and go Raiders, Giants, Commanders, Panthers?
Well, because that division's so bad.
It's
not
bad.
As if Tampa's going to do anything. I mean, Tampa's favored this weekend, and so they could be a game ahead, but it's not as if they're going to run away with it at this point with how injured they are.
I'm going to say 10-7. I'm going to say 2-2. I'll say they lose one of the games to the NFC South. Could be the trap. Like, the Saints could be a trap game where we're just going, you go to New Orleans, you win. It's not an easy place to play. Their defense is playing much better. Coming off of a bye generally is viewed as you're rested and you're in a good spot. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget their biggest letdown of the season against Dallas was off of their mini bye. When I spent all week talking about it's the most rested they've been, it's the most prep time they've had, this is when coaches do their best work, this is when the players are at their peak of their powers, and they laid the biggest egg of their year. So it's possible they come out of the bye feeling a little fat post-Thanksgiving and, you know, just doesn't look the same against New Orleans. And then you've got to go beat Atlanta and Dallas to get to 2-2 because you lost to the Eagles.
Yeah, and also looking at New Orleans, again, I'm not sitting here telling you they're a good team. They are not. But they have a couple ingredients that are scary. Alvin Kamara could have that game, right? Rashid Shaheed gets behind everybody on defense, big play type receiver. So, you know, it's not as if they're just going to go there and go down their leg.
Everybody's favorite punching bag, by the way, Derek Carr, who everyone acts like stinks, right? They are much more competitive with him than, say, who's the
Spencer
guy?
Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler, who played at nine colleges, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, Derek Carr this past week was 24 of 36 for a touchdown and no picks, hasn't thrown a pick in four games, and they lost by one possession score to a hungry L.A. team. They had won two games before that.
Oh, they are not bad.
No, not at all. And he had four touchdowns, no picks, and two wins against Atlanta and Cleveland. So it's not like that's a team that, you know, they're going to go. We should expect them to win by 15. That's probably a one-possession game. You got to protect the football. Weird things can happen. Oh, by the way, you're going on the road with a kicker you don't really trust.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's not that fun. Let's go to the phone, see what you guys think. 800-636-1067. How many wins on the Commander's schedule? I guess I'll pose one more question to you, Danny, before we do that. So we're debating between 10 or 11, meaning two or three wins the rest of the way. Does 11 definitely get them to the sixth seed, in your opinion? Which is so important because if they're the sixth seed, now you can actually win a playoff game because you're playing against a Tampa or an Atlanta or a Seattle or an Arizona. You're skipping Philly or Detroit.
Right. You cruise past that. Yeah, I don't think it definitely does. It likely does, though. Right, because that's assuming that Green Bay has one more slip up, and that's an NFC slip up, and then Washington would have the advantage.
Yes, yeah, so
in theory, right?
Green Bay's record after last night is 9-4.
Yep,
that would allow them to go. Yeah, they would have 2-2 down the stretch, but if they go 2-2, Washington would tiebreaker them.
If Washington's 3-1, yep.
For the record, Green Bay plays Seattle on the road. New Orleans, who we're talking about, not really knowing what to think. Minnesota on the road, very good team. And then Chicago. I can see 2-2 there. You basically need two Packers losses for 11 to get you the sixth seed.
Yep.
Which I think is very possible.
It's on the table.
In fact, I would, if I had to bet right now, I'd bet on Washington winning 11, and I would probably bet on Green Bay winning 11. If I had to bet on, like, individually those two teams.
I see.
Not to say that, you know, the outcome is Washington is the sixth seed, but, I mean, there's a reason why there's a 25% chance of it happening, according to ESPN Analytics. Let's go to Kevin in Virginia on Grant and Danny. Kevin, how many wins are left on the Commanders' schedule?
I say 2-2. They beat the Saints. They have a tough loss to the Eagles by a field goal. Takes a little out of their sails, and Atlanta is the trap game. Atlanta will be fighting for their playoff lives, I believe, and will come in and play a surprisingly good game, and we may lose that game. And then we have every incentive to beat Dallas to make the playoffs in the end. So I think we go 10-7. The question is, do we make the playoffs at 10-7? Is that a lock?
Yes.
Or is there someone behind us that could sneak up?
I would say it's almost
a
certainty.
I don't know that answer.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. A 10-7 Commanders team is almost a lock to make the playoffs based on their tie-breaking metrics. And the fact that the field behind them, to answer your direct question, is so distantly behind them. So they have a two-game cushion right now on Tampa Bay, 6-6, who has a soft schedule but will overtake Atlanta for the division if they get hot. Atlanta and Tampa aren't both making the playoffs, in other words. So you don't really have to worry about Tampa. Then you've got Arizona at 6-6. You have the tiebreaker over the Cardinals. You beat them head-to-head. So effectively, that's a three-game cushion with four to go. They'd have to win out. You'd have to lose out. The most interesting team, I'd say, is the Rams at 6-6, who could go 3-1 to get to 10-7, which is possible, I suppose, or 3-2 at this point to get to they have five games left. They have to go 4-1. So to get to 10-7 to tie 10-7 Washington, they would have to go 4-1 against Buffalo, San Francisco, Arizona, Seattle, New York. Really hard to
really
imagine
tough.
Them doing
yeah.
that. If they did somehow, they still might not tiebreaker Washington. So, yeah, I think a 10-win Commanders team would have, if I had to guess, like a 90-some percent, 85, 90% chance of making the playoffs. It'd be hard to imagine them not. Here's a question, and we'll hit the phones with more of your calls on how many wins are left next. 800-636-1067, you want to hop in. We're acting like the Eagles game is just a scheduled loss.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, the Cowboys Week 18 game is just an automatic win. How sure are we about those two things?
Yeah.
Why can't they beat the Eagles? Remember, had they kicked the field goal in the fourth quarter in Philly, they would have led the Eagles with about 7 minutes to go in that game. They ended up getting worked. And the Cowboys, who they've played, have already beaten them. And we're just saying in Week 18 that they would just go there and handle their business. So let's zoom in on those two games, I think, next on Grant and Danny. We're live in Springfield at Hard Times Cafe. Our field trip series on Fridays continuing through the remainder of the football season here on The Fan. Taking you up to 6:30 tonight from Hard Times Cafe in Springfield. We're Grant and Danny on The Fan, top of the hour. We're going to multitask. We will get you ready for the NFL weekend, but we do have to look at some of the college matchups on Saturday as well, some conference championship games that have caught our attention. Should be a great day of college pigskin tomorrow. But right now, the discussion at hand, how many wins are left on the Commanders' schedule? 800-636-1067. Charlie is in Silver Spring on The Fan. What's up, Charlie? How are you?
Hi, guys. Love the show. I listen every night on my way home from D.C.
Thank you, buddy.
You're a sweetheart.
So my short answer here is the general consensus that we have three wins left in the season, right?
I would say two or three, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus among Commanders fans. But the permanently damaged Redskins WFT fan in me says that we have not proven that we are above laying an egg against anyone. So let me present this scenario to you guys and test your confidence. The final week of the season, we're heading into Dallas in a scenario, win and you're in, lose, and you're out. How do you feel about that game?
I feel amazing.
I do not. Terrified.
Really?
Terrified beyond compare.
The Cowboys are terrible.
That mattered the first time.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you for the call in that terrible scenario.
That would be excruciating and horrendous.
Yep.
And obviously I would not feel great because they just lost to Dallas. But here's I would sign up for it sight unseen. That's a bad team. You're a playoff team. It's week 18. They don't care. They're ready for their offseason. If you can't win that game, you don't get – you shouldn't go to the playoffs.
Well, of course not, but it's still going to hurt more than anything in the world. I mean, I still think about that.
It's not going to hurt when they're handing out T-shirts and hats for the Commanders when Jaden Daniels is up on stage getting interviewed about his playoff berth.
That's assuming the win, of course. But, yes, if it does happen, it'll be very nice. But, we said that leading up to that Giants game that Bruce Allen couldn't get over for however many years ago that they lost. I mean, the on paper, the rival thing – at the end of the season like that, it's hard to trust just yet in terms of them coming through. In a couple of years, as this program develops and continues, they come through in a few more of those games, I can have the trust for it. But this is still a bit of a house money situation where it's like for the first time we've been this far above sea level.
Yeah.
The water rising a little bit's not the craziest thing in the world.
Looking at an analytics and data science guy's tweet here, Timo Risk, who's with PFF, this is how many wins each team's projected to need and their chance to make the playoffs. So if the Commanders don't win another game, which would, by the way, what an abomination that would be.
That would not be good.
But if they go 8-9, they have an 11% chance to make the playoffs, which is still really, really high, I think, by the way. Like, that's not terrible.
Yeah.
But let's not do that. If they go 9-8, which would be a disappointment because they would have gone 1 for the rest of the year, they have a 32% chance of making the playoffs. If they get to 10 wins, they have an 88% chance to make the playoffs. So when I say it's almost a lock, I think I said 80 to 90%. It's kind of locked in there. 88%, not guaranteed, because depending on who you lose to. If you lose to, say, New Orleans, that's less damaging than if you lose to Atlanta, who might eventually catch you in that circumstance. But an 88% chance at 10 wins to make the playoffs for Washington, to just answer the question from last segment. Let's go to David in Silver Spring on Grant and Danny, live on the Fan. What's up, David?
Hey, good afternoon or evening. I guess my point is I could see them losing all of them. Who have they really beaten that's better than the four teams are coming up against? The worst team that they're going to play is one they already lost to.
Well, if you're saying they haven't beaten anybody good, I think that's fair. Their best win is against 6-6 Arizona.
Yep.
At a time where Arizona was not playing that well. But New Orleans is not 6-6, and I don't think they're as good as Arizona. So when you say who are they playing that's not as good as Arizona, the Saints for one, and the Cowboys in the final week of the season for two. I mean, they have two of their four remaining games against bad teams, legitimately bad teams. Arizona is not that. But I think that was just a way to kind of, not nefariously, but to take a shot at the fact that they don't have quality wins. And
yeah.
Maybe his point is, oh, good thing they got right against the Titans, who have nine losses, but they haven't beaten anyone. In his opinion, maybe they're not that good.
Well, right. It's a version of the point I'm kind of dancing around, which is they don't have the resume of a ultimate 100% put-it-in-stone trust team. Right? Like, they've beaten most of the bad teams on their schedule, and you do that enough times, you go to the postseason, which I think the Chargers are going to do that. Washington looks to do that with a good percentage chance, as you said. But there's not this, I trust Kansas City to be competitive against every team they play this week, and that's not an unfair example, but I feel the same about Buffalo. I feel the same about Philadelphia, Detroit, Green Bay to a degree, right? I don't know that Washington, I feel like Washington's going to show up and play well against the Saints, but would it stun you if you go into a tough building and lose to a 4-8 team that's been frisky lately? Like, that wouldn't be the craziest thing ever to happen, I guess is kind of my point, right? And that's sort of what they're almost out of that bucket, where they're climbing out of that mediocre to bad bucket, and they're going into they have earned our blind faith, and they're not there yet to me.
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan. You know what I love about Hard Times in Springfield? Their wings are really good. I just noticed this. They've already got the little logos of every team underneath the TVs. Did they do that while we were here? I didn't notice that earlier.
So was it already done? Oh, look at that.
So this is for Sunday.
Oh.
Sunday ticket. You come, you watch your team. So, like, that screens Jets, Dolphins. You got the Browns, Steelers, giant TVs. You want Falcons, Vikings. It's right here in the corner. But they tell you right out front with the logos which games each TV's on. But they've already got it done. You don't even have to
That's
worry.
That's pretty neat.
On Friday afternoon.
That's actually really cool.
I love
actually,
that.
Actually, I didn't even notice that.
Everything's coming up us. When you look at me, what do you see? What do you see?
Grant Paulson.
You don't. Not according to Lance's wife, you don't.
Oh, no.
You see Matt Damon.
We're going to be – this is –
I was just told by a member of the listening audience.
This happened too.
That I look like Matt Damon.
In front of witnesses.
And I mean, that is the good stuff.
And can I – this is going to sound bad coming out here, but we're just talking about what happened?
Sure.
Okay. It wasn't followed by laughter.
No. I even said, like, oh, thank you, that's funny.
Right.
And she's like, I'm serious.
I'm serious.
She said no one's ever looked more like him.
You look like Matt Damon without a tan.
Yeah, she didn't say without a tan. But, like, that was like a, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to say it. And I'm like, you could say anything you want after that.
Yeah.
Whatever caveat, Matt Damon, but, like, add a couple more of those. That's fine.
Sure. Add a couple
commas. Said I looked like Matt Damon.
That's what she said to you.
So, I'm just saying.
Yeah, cloud nine.
Enjoy. Today's a win. Yeah, Danny, you got Ben Affleck.
Which I a couple of people have given me that before.
Sure.
I don't – no, it's true. I get Ryan Day. I get Brett Bielsma.
When Ryan Day I can kind
of
see.
Yeah, I got a lot of Ryan Day.
Yeah.
It's a lot of dark hair. It's a lot of red cheeks. I get occasional Chris Evans. Remember the guys from Impractical Jokers backstage? One guy told me I look like Chris Evans.
That's right.
I've gotten that before.
I do remember that.
What's the overweight coach from the Big Ten? Brett Bielma. Yeah, Brett Bielma.
Are we talking about what you get or what I got?
I mean, what I get.
Okay.
I'm saying a little different. I've gotten all these before, but I've never heard someone go, you know what you look like? Is Matt Damon.
Matt
Without
Damon.
A tan.
Yeah. So, just so everyone knows,
yeah.
Today was a win for me.
So, congrats, Allison. Huh?
That'll be mentioned at home tonight.
Yeah, that's coming up.
2, 3, or 7 times. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's preview, speaking of college football, the weekend ahead. Next, we're live in Springfield at Hard Times Cafe. Swing on by. We're here till 6:30.